Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yeah, but that's the no game plan encourages it, because he's not getting into the game. He's coming out to get into the game. Yeah. And he thinks it's fine. He thinks it's fine because it's in his head that this is something that he does. He drops out in and around there. You don't drop in and around there. Son runs past you and you come out.
Yeah.
It's not the same thing as just wandering out to have a chat with Declan Rice.
This is Paul McGrath. You're listening to the Villa Podcast.
Coleman, little dink into the middle. Yeah! Oh, what about that? What about that?
As soon as I'm obviously on the pitch, I'm just, at my happiest.
Yeah, I never win something for Portugal national team. But I win tonight.
He can't take it, can he? He can't take it. He just can't take it, because we've out-tacticked him, we've out-witted him.
I'm so glad. Something unbelievable in my career. Something that I deserve.
You're playing international football. You're playing international football. Control the bloody ball. Pass it and move to your mates. And if you lose it, run back. And run back like you care.
A great game between two sides of the same standard. That's what happens when two teams of the same level play each other. You get games like this, two teams going at each other. And like, it must be said, great point for plucky little England. Like, after holding out for a win against Group Minnows Croatia, like, they've really put themselves in with a chance of qualifying for the last 16 now, and I don't think anybody could have hoped for anything more coming into this tournament. England are exceeding all expectations, Liam.
Like, to be honest, I think you're right to bring it back to that Croatia game, because the performance of England against Croatia, the fear from Southgate, the hand-wringing after the game. And look, England won, so it's great for them. And, you know, yeah, it's a great result for a plucky little England. It's hard to argue with, but it's all put into context when you see Croatia against the Czech Republic
today.
When you see that game tonight. And Croatia are shite. And England should have been galloping into this fixture. But the players England have available to them, they should just be brushing Croatia aside. You can't be basing your assumptions on 3 years ago. Croatia are a different team. Modric is 35. Mandzukic is gone. Rakitic is gone. England were worried about their keeper and defence. Villa's fourth choice goalkeeper has 19 caps for Croatia. Dejan Lovren is their rock. And look, England are an entirely different beast now as well. Lingard's been replaced by Foden. Ali's been replaced by Mount. Jude Bellingham and Jack Grealish have replaced Loftus-Cheek and Danny fucking Welbeck. Let's go. Think big. You're fucking England. You're a tournament favourite. What the fuck was that?
One final thing on the Croatia game. It's not like, you know, Croatia were during that game crying out to be beaten. Like, it's not like they posed England any problems. They were there, bent over, and England just passed the ball around and did nothing with it. Scotland tonight, England did the same thing. This is what we were saying at the time. England did the same thing, only they met what looks like a better team than Croatia. Definitely better set up tonight and more up for it. And they posed England way more problems. England did the same thing, which wasn't a lot. And instead, we're lucky to get a draw in the end. They were, why are Scotland better than England?
It was really quite an incredible performance from England. Runners from deep. That's it. Like, it worked at times against Croatia because Croatia weren't as disciplined. They weren't as fired up. They weren't playing for pride as much as for points. And Croatia just thought they would win. They opened up. I mean, to persist with that approach for the entirety of the first half was, like, I can't think of any other word. It's incredible. To come into the game with it is laughable. That they had to have known that Scotland were going to set up like that. They had to have known that Scotland were watching the Croatia game. It was apart from that, it was also terribly executed. I mean, it's not just the manager there. The runs were too early and the passes were too late. The number of times you would just see four English players strung out across the forward line with Scottish lads up their arse. But the English players then were just hanging around in there once they got there. They must have been enjoying the affection, the physical connection, because they weren't getting any fucking connection from any of their teammates. There was no second run after the pointless first. It was just one straight run up through the middle, stop, turn around, watch Declan Rice pass it back to Mings. It was so hard to watch. It was like watching an episode of The Office. It was gobsmacking, stomach churning, but it wasn't fucking funny.
And that is a really strange thing about, if you take Sterling and Foden as two examples, you know, two Man City players who often face setups like this, and they don't just stand in either corner. They were like two kids playing corner forward in Gaelic football tonight, just standing there in the corner waiting for the ball to come to them. You know they can offer something different if they start playing with all their players, but when they wear that shirt, not just these two, you know, when these players wear that shirt, I'm not saying that the shirt weighs on them, and I'm not even going back to the England teams of the last 15 years. I'm saying they just get lazy and comfortable, and maybe it's a product of not even trying to slag Southgate here, like the fact that you don't have a lot of time to coach these players, and then they just very lazily take that option of, well, Scotland are no threat to us here. Even though I'm not a threat to Scotland now, I'll stand here. And, like, nobody's going to do anything wrong and nobody's going to have a burning effigy of them after this. And then you play out a 0-0 draw because you're not doing anything. Like, apart from that chance that Stones had, did England have any other openings? That was from a set piece.
No, they had fuck all. They were dreadful. There was one from Harry Kane. I think he might have been offside with a diving header that he just didn't get right. Twice Sterling nutmegged the fullback to somebody who just hit it wide. Like, no, they were dreadful. Like, the second half, it was just a load of players running out to get the ball from the lad in possession, running forward to where they were, and turning around and passing it back to the same person they got it from in the first fucking place.
Yeah.
Like, I cannot believe this is where England are at. After all this time, after all those supposed failures at major tournaments, all the lessons they've supposed to have learned. Like, we all know what needs to happen now. Let's get on with it. Get the next foreign manager in. Let's get the cycle going. Like a modern, progressive, continental manager. That's the cycle. Let's get on with it. Like, failing that, they could just appoint a fucking manager.
Yeah.
Think about how low Hutchin and Neville have dragged England's expectations.
Well, that's so low that they hired Sam fucking Allardyce after.
and so low after that debacle that Southgate is the England manager. Southgate's untouchable because he beat a shite Sweden team and drew with a shite Colombia team.
Yeah.
That's what England did at the World Cup. And don't let anyone trick you into thinking they did anything else. That's what they did.
Yes, actually, if England didn't do that, that would have been a big failure of a World Cup. That would have just been as good as Hodgson or Neville, or, you know, they wouldn't have done anything. They lost to Belgium twice in that World Cup. They played them in the groups and they played them in the third place playoff.
They played two teams and lost three games. That's what they did at that World Cup.
Yeah.
They played Belgium and Croatia and lost.
No, it's worrying because, like, you're here now in the Euros. Like, that's the thing. It's like two games in and it's like, ah, shit. They are shit. It wasn't just a bad day at the office the last day. And all the hype that we're building up around them, it's not hype. It's real. England have one of the best squads in the world. They're ready to go and compete. And, like, I know we're laughing because the cycle always was get a continental manager in, and then when that goes stale, he's not passionate enough. We need an English man in. Somebody who's got that animation on the sideline. Then he comes in. Then it's like, we're being left behind. We need to join the continental. You know, and it goes on and on. Sam Allardyce comes in. You know, you might get another fucking chance yet. But, like, this, a continental manager actually would really suit this team. Like, imagine Mancini in charge. Look how Italy are playing. So much verve. So much intensity, and I mean on the ball. I mean, like, drives to cut teams open, just attacking veracity. England are 11 players now who are the shape of a manager who is thinking and worrying about conceding all the time. Like, that's how they look, and that's how they're playing. And it is hard to get away from that from the players, because, like, you mentioned Kane that one time that he was offside and he had a diving header. There were a couple of times, like, I think Sterling was offside, and Kane is 25 metres back. He's a striker. Like, Reece James has the ball, and the striker is 25 metres back. Now, maybe that's a big problem with Kane just in general, and we'll get to him later. But, like, that also comes from how the team is set up, and most importantly, what the main objective of the team is, and what their purpose is. What are they talking about building up to this game? Are they talking about sweeping Croatia and Scotland aside? Let's get through this fucking group. Let's go, as you say. Or are they talking about, you know, we need Trippier left back here, because what if Perisic happens to move over to the right? Is that the sort of shit that they're worrying about? And it seems to be that's what they are worrying about.
It absolutely is what they're worried about. It's pathetic. There was times when Kane was just dropping out into left back. I saw him pick up the ball, like, where are you going?
Yeah.
And this is the thing I'm talking about. It just became a case of they just didn't know what to do anymore. There was nine Scotland players. You must have been expecting this. They just didn't know what to do. A bunch of lads running out to get the ball because they were sick of the ball not coming into them. It's okay to lose the ball trying to pass it. You're not going to lose it anyway. Just pass the ball quickly. If you pass the ball quickly enough, it doesn't matter how many Scottish players there are there. They can't get to it. You're all fucking brilliant. Pass the ball to each other, kill it, and pass it to the next man. Move around. Give your fucking teammates an option. Stop all standing there looking at the fucking spare dick in the middle of the pitch with a ball at his feet.
We're winding each other up here now. it's infuriating. And, like, we're going to have a whole section in the next part, so just bear with us. Let's talk about the one penalty incident. Robertson on Sterling. Do you think it was a penalty?
Like, the Alaba one was given, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, the Alaba one's annoying for the same reason as the Sterling one. The Alaba one's more of a foul, definitely. There's more contact there. But he's running out in the box. He's going nowhere. It's just so annoying to concede a penalty in that situation. And Sterling's over the sideline. The ball's gone. It's unbelievably irritating if a penalty was given for that. But it's also so tame from Robertson. And you see Sterling's reaction. That just all adds into it. Adds into the how annoying it would have been for it to be given. If I was an Ireland fan, if I was an England fan, sorry, if I was an Ireland fan and it happened to Ireland, I would absolutely be saying it was a stonewall penalty.
And you are an Ireland fan, right?
Yes. If it happened to an Ireland player, if I was an England fan, I would be saying it's a stonewall penalty.
If I gave a fuck about Ireland. That's not fair. Liam does give a fuck about Ireland. Yeah, what I loved about that, and this is what I do. I actually want VAR to bring this in, because VAR doesn't need to be on this search for relentless consistency, because you're not going to get it. Not every match plays out the same way all the time. But So there does have to be that element of, come on, you know, like we don't need you to say, like, yeah, he did clip him. And like, yeah, Robertson doesn't need to do that. There was actually a stage before us, Sterling had the ball dead to the box and he just come into it. And Stuart Armstrong, who come on for Billy, I don't know what Billy Gilmore was doing off the pitch. Like, he was flying. He looked like he wasn't tiring. He was so nippy across the ground. And then you brought on Armstrong, who actually did all right in the end. But The way he was standing up, Sterling, I was like, fucking relax, what are you doing? Sterling was just jenking side to side, waiting for this big clumsy tackle. And it came from Robertson in the end. But I love that the referee was just like, nah, there's 10 minutes left. You're not winning this match from a fucking penalty. Get up. And you're going to have to try better than that to win this match.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've seen this referee before. I've seen him in Champions League games, and he fucking loves laughing at the guy who's been fouled. Just nodding his head, saying, oh, did someone do an owie? Let's get on with it. And Scotland really, really took advantage of that in the first 15 minutes. That and the whole thing, there's no such thing as a yellow card tackle in the first 15 minutes. But I've seen this ref before, and I like the cut of his jib.
Just finally, before we move on and we'll get into Gareth Southgate and all his decisions, what do you think of John McGinn? And finally on Steve Clark's Scotland setup, Scott McTominay at centre-back. Whatever about McGinn, I thought McGinn did all right, but he's supposed to be that attacking influence, like, you know, that's what he'd been so good at for Scotland, and he was tidy on the ball, and he didn't play with fear or anything like that, but he didn't give them that drive anyway. He had one 40-yard shot that was blocked.
I'm glad to fucking see he's not just doing that for Villa, pissing me off. I'm glad to see he carries that into every game of football he plays.
But I'll just bring him up because we are on the Villa podcast, so we'll start with McGinn.
Yeah, McGinn was much, much improved today. It's the type of game that suits him from a defensive point of view. When there's so many bodies in there, he can dive in. That if he doesn't win the ball back, there's somebody there to cover for him. Yeah. And that was the perfect referee for him as well. I mean, McGinn had about 5 yellow card tackles in the first 4 or 5 minutes, I thought. and he got away with a lot. He got booked for whinging as opposed to any of his tackles. Yeah. But McGinn was fucking dreadful against the Czech Republic. He lost the ball so many times for Scotland that it was criminal. And tonight, I thought he was really, really good. It's the same reason now that next year I'll have to listen to every commentator talk about how good John McGinn is, because he played well whenever English people were watching him play. The one Aston Villa game they see a season, John McGinn looks fucking lethal, and they talk about it for the rest of the season.
But no,
this will carry through to that.
You mentioned this when we were talking about Villa needing a centre midfielder and things like that, and, like, you know, what the upgrade will be next year. And you had said that McGinn might be consigned to playing against the big teams. And, like, you know, you see that tonight. He definitely has that role. And I mean, look, I think McGinn is so stubborn and so much of a workaholic. I have a feeling that he'll still work his way into the Villa team next year, no matter who they sign. That's my gut instinct. That's what I want to see as well, because obviously I like McGinn, but I think he'll definitely always have a role against our fellow Big Six rivals.
Oh, look, Villa need to sign a midfielder, as far as I'm concerned, and a forward, and both of those signings will make John McGinn a better player. I mean, do you think John McGinn is going to accept having his position threatened? Is he? Fuck. John McGinn will be improved by not having just Marvelous Nakamba as the only other option behind them. Don't worry about that.
Well, here's an option for us in the transfer market. Now that Bjorn Engels has departed, or is departing, I've got somebody who can play centre midfield and centre back, and his name is Scott McTominay.
I thought the first half, Scott McTominay was an absolute disaster waiting to happen, and sure enough, the disaster happened numerous occasions. I mean, England were so shit, but they got in about 3 times with a ball over the top of Scott McTominay's head because he was just wandering back into midfield position. It was like he forgot he was playing centre half on 4 or 5 occasions at the start of that game. It was fucking hilarious to watch as a neutral, kind of a neutral. It was enjoyable, and he was shite. And the second half, AI got a lot better. I thought the game became a lot more condensed. England weren't trying to go in behind as much. They were just playing in front of them. And that made Scott McTominay's day.
Yeah, it's I don't know if it's a brave idea from Steve Clarke, but I can definitely see what he's trying to do, and it's positive. Like, he wants Tierney and McTominay there for when they do have the ball, and they can keep it and work it out from the back and start to create openings a bit more measured. But like, I just don't think... I think you text me this. I don't think McTominay's that important that you need to shoehorn him in at centre-back just to get him into the team.
No, make the decision. Drop McGregor or drop McTominay. Yeah. Surely there's another centre-back. It's definitely brave from Clark. I've never seen anybody else play two of the three like that.
Yeah.
it's insane. And he got away with it a bit tonight. Tierney was brilliant. He definitely got forward a lot more than McTominay. But McTominay went into centre-half against the Czech Republic. He was a fucking disaster there as well. To start with him tonight, it's hard to say if it was bravery or stupidity.
Well, speaking of which, let's get to some Gareth Southgate. See you there.
We're going to start with the thoughts of the Villa podcast.
Maybe it was just because I really didn't want to fucking lose to Leeds United.
And the lifting up of Patrick Bamford with one hand, I did enjoy that, because Patrick Bamford is an unlikable character and he's probably been a bit of a twat to Tyrone Mings all game.
He's nothing like that either, is he? He's a real...
He's an unlikable character.
Like, one of he's put on a foot. Patrick Bamford can't skin you. He's not that type of player. It's not any game. Somebody put on a foot there.
I felt all the pain. I imagine I probably sound as much of a biased, one-eyed idiot.
Block the fucking shot.
It was a fucking disaster.
I did quite enjoy the hopelessness of their grief with it, though, as well. Because they're like, not that it fucking mattered anyway. Should we have beaten anyway?
Not that it fucking mattered anyway. Villa was shite.
Like, there's nothing but space. Leeds are going to be spanked a few times this season. Make no mistake about that. I mean... They're really well coached. They're really aggressive. They're really adventurous. But the players are shit.
The key line is that we're well coached and very aggressive, but our players are shit.
They're not either. They're not shit.
I mean, that was great. That did have everything. Only downside, those Brummie accents, though. Really go through you, don't they?
Gareth Southgate, the whole of England is with you, meter. I've got a lot of things going down on this meter today. First one, Luke Shaw and Reece James coming in. Now, not for the fact that they're coming in, but for the reason. Gareth Southgate, like again, you know, people eating this up beforehand. He said it was for their technical ability, which will be important for this game. Get fucked. Just go away. Like, two things on this. As if they wouldn't have been able to use that technical ability against Croatia. Do you know what? They couldn't possibly have used it against them. And as if they wouldn't also be able to defend as comfortably as Walker and Trippier did against Croatia. Like, talk about overthinking. I know he's got options there, but who are your fullbacks? Shaw and James can do the job that Walker and Trippier did against Croatia. You know, it's just, again, just this idea that Gareth Southgate is expertly navigating England through this tournament by thinking to himself, never mind saying it out loud to other people, never mind the team as well, who are probably starting to raise some eyebrows that now they have to set up in a specialised way against Scotland.
Yeah, I'm sure those two defenders would have been okay at defending against Croatia. It's insane stuff. Like, Reece James is an absolutely brilliant, brilliant footballer, and Luke Shaw was one of the best fullbacks in the country the season just passed there. The idea that they couldn't have been able to play against Croatia is just utter, utter nonsense. But even at that as well, the idea that Kyle Walker isn't good on the ball is crazy. He plays for Pep Guardiola's Man City at right back. He would have been fine against Scotland. And Trippier is good on the ball. He's always been good on the ball. He's played for Spurs. He plays for Atletico Madrid. He could play at left back if you wanted him to. Yeah. Ben Chilwell could have played there. Luke Shaw doesn't have any special technical ability. The other thing is as well, you're right to say that they're overthinking it, but Scotland only have one world-class player as well. So I don't think he fought it all the way through. If you do think that Kyle Walker is a better defender, maybe you want to leave him on for this game against Scotland's only threat.
Yeah. They're two only threats going down the same side.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and that's it. Again, I'm not like getting at these players. This is actually a good example. So all the fullbacks are relatively the same standard. But this is the sort of jargon that like the like of Grealish and all the other boys have to face. Like, you know, Southgate overthinking it, thinking, well, Grealish is good at cutting inside on his right, or, you know, rather than just playing his best players or the players that he thinks is best. He's thinking, he's now got it in his head because Reece James is good at crossing the ball, that, yeah, he can't be trusted to defend the two times that they had to defend against Croatia. Next one, going down. Leaving Jack Grealish on the bench for 63 minutes. That's now 153 minutes of the tournament that Jack Grealish has missed. And do you know what I'll say on this? When Gareth Southgate was in trouble tonight, his first port of call was Jack Grealish, the man who wasn't deemed worthy enough to be one of the 15 players that got a game against Croatia. Like, the mask has slipped now. Like, there's no more playing it cool. No more playing hard to get. At the first sight of a problem, that's who you went to. That's who you turned around and begged to take you back. Can you get me out of this predicament? Can you save me from a fucking life of loneliness? You know, like, if Jack Grealish isn't that high in your pecking order, and then when you are actually in trouble, like, that's, it just proves that, you know, like, Gareth Southgate actually knows. That's the worst about it now. We were judging him for not realizing how good Grealish was. But obviously he does. He realised that we are playing shit here. I need to get the best possible option on here. Who will I bring on? It's Jack Grealish, the man I didn't deem good enough the last game.
Yeah, and the fact even that he said that about Shaw and Reece James proves it as well. It proves that he knew what to expect. So the fact that he did nothing about it is all the more baffling. He knew he needed people who could pass the ball around, who could keep the ball, who would be confident on it, but he still didn't set his team up to do that, and he didn't pick his best player to do that either. He didn't pick the player that he needed to unlock it. The only player who was any good in the first half was Mason Mount. He died a complete death in the second half, but he needed players like that on the pitch, and he needed fucking Jack Grealish, because Jack Grealish has it all. He has what you think Raheem Sterling has, and he also has a lot more. He's got a lot more vision. He's got a lot more through balls in him. He's got much more ability to slow the game down, to speed it up. And this idea that Raheem Sterling is good and behind is such bollocks. Raheem Sterling is the slowest player I've ever seen in a football pitch. Talk about taking any momentum out of an attack. Christ almighty. That young fella's whole year just loves getting the ball, stopping and not doing anything. Stopping and pretending, looking like, threatening, like he's going to go past the fullback and then not doing it. He has been dreadful for the last 12 months, and Jack Grealish has been one of the best players in Europe. Play Jack Grealish.
Yeah, that's actually next on the list of going down on this meter is leaving Sterling on. Like, such pointless running in behind. You're right to mention that, because he's sharp, he gets free. He gets the ball in behind and he waits for everybody to come back. Not just the player marking him, but seven other players to set up the defence. And the whole sting comes out of it. Like, he's got no directness anymore. And do you know what I noticed about Sterling? His runs are actually a bad thing. Like, so I would say his off-the-ball running, it's good. It's probably the best thing about his game at the minute. But it's also the worst thing about his game, because what it's doing is encouraging players to play at them. and then that's ruining the attacks, because it's going to him, or it's either going to him in an offside position, or it's going to him and he's pulling back, slowing the attack down essentially, yeah, after looking so sharp, or he just gives it away carelessly. Like, I've never seen a man who's such abandon with possession, like, and not in a good way. Like, we love people who take a risk, but he's not taking a risk. He's just poking the ball away most of the time. He's trying to play a 1-2 with somebody when it's never on, or he's never going to get it back. He's trying to nutmeg somebody when that's not on. It's just such carelessness on possession. And you're right, like, we've had 12 months of evidence to expect this, but Southgate didn't.
Yeah, and people just need to think about over the last 12 months, how many times have you seen Raheem Sterling's face looking pissed off?
Yeah.
Far too fucking often. The camera is just continuously panning back to him after he's lost the ball or the ref hasn't given him a free kick.
Yeah.
That's the two, and he just looks so angry, either with himself or with the referee. And it's happened so often this year, I'm sick of the sight of him. Yeah. And I used to really like Raheem Sterling, obviously, for those 2 years where Man City were unplayable. Raheem Sterling was just an absolute joy to watch. And people talk about Pep Guardiola picking Gundogan for the Champions League final. The fact that Sterling came back into that team when really under the radar for a bad decision. Because Pep Guardiola had made the big call in the lead up to that. He had dropped Sterling for some big games in the running. And he needed it because Sterling was playing dreadfully. And the fact they brought him back in for the Champions League final, fuck City just as much as not having a midfielder on the pitch did.
Yeah. Yeah. And like it fucked Foden, who was playing so well on the left as well. It had such a knock-on effect. And again, City weren't as bad for it. But like when you see Sterling free, you'll play at him because that's what good players do. You see somebody free, you play the right pass. But it's not really the right pass in this case. And that leads into the next point on the meter, another one going down. The Gareth Southgate, the whole of England is with you meter, bringing Foden off to get Grealish on. This is a frustrating thing that bad managers do all the time. Like when they try to rectify the thing that they've gotten wrong, they take off somebody you don't want them to take off. Like Grealish and Foden should be on the same pitch together. Like Foden was the one player, and I know he had... it died out, but the game had descended into chaos at that stage. Scotland had 25 minutes to hang on. You know, like that was such a... It was a way simpler job for them. Like it was just everybody backs the walls. We're close here. Let's get this job done. Let's foul people. Let's be rough. Like England are shitting themselves. The fans are on their back. They needed Foden and Grealish in the same team. Like throughout the game, whenever they did look dangerous, it was Foden who was showing any signs of cutting them open. Mount was all right. Mount was decent. But Foden was the one who was offering something different. And it would have been great to see... that would have been great to see Grealish, Mount and Foden together.
Like, do you want to win this fucking game or not? It's England against Scotland. You're taking off a forward for a forward. What the fuck are you doing? You have to score. You're playing at home. You're the favourites for the tournament. Get Phillips off the pitch.
So just on that, the next point on this is leaving Phillips and Rice on the whole game.
Fucking pathetic. Let's just get going. Come on. You've got all this talent at your disposal. Try to win these games. Scotland are out playing you. And I know there's a big risk that you won't beat Czech Republic in the next game if you fuck this one up. So you have to cling on to the point against the mighty Scots. Fucking grow up. Yeah. Take the game to Scotland, change it around. You're embarrassing yourselves.
But that's the whole point as well about Phillips and Rice staying on the whole game. Like, I assume the argument is that would leave you too open, but you're not controlling midfield anyway. They're not doing that job that they're there to do. So you surely you have to change that midfield. Didn't that one part of his thinking think, why don't they try Foden back there? Or let's go 4-3-3. Why don't we put Mount back there? Like, these players have played there. Grealish has talked this week about enjoying playing in a number 8 role as well, as long as there's 3 in the middle. Like, you know, so why is he not trying that? Is he chasing this game or not? He's obviously not. They made 2 subs tonight. They were fucking dreadful. They made 2 subs and they brought off Foden and Kane for Rashford and Grealish. Like, that was unbelievable. Like, I'll go back to it. Sterling stayed on and he brought off Foden and he kept on his 2 defensive midfielders as England petered to a halt against Scotland.
But just think about what that would have said to Scotland as well. You know, if John McGinn sees Phillips going off and Grealish coming on, he knows the game is fucking changing.
Yeah.
He knows that something different is he's about to encounter something a hell of a lot fucking different. Scotland are going to take a step back. Fuck. There's 4 forwards on the pitch now. But no, they just let Scotland keep going, keep being brave, keep running relentlessly at them. Change the game, control the game.
I've got one thing going up on the meter before we move on. Going up, a clean sheet against a superior Scotland side.
Look, the O'Donnell volley was really, really good, and it was a really good save from Pickford, but we all know what that means. That just means there's a howler coming in the next game.
We're on to the Rosenthal Award here now, so the Ronnie Rosenthal Award. Jordan Pickford's Tinder profile looked attractive today. Like, that was that was a good save, and yeah, like, not only a good save, good reaction, and actually at the start I was like, was it that far away from him? It was decent enough distance away from him that it was a good save, and he got it up away from Shea Adams's head then as well, a strong hand. So
he could have put it straight onto Shea Adams's head. That wouldn't have mattered.
Well, another nomination, Shea Adams' slice at the back post. Lovely ball over the top. There it is, banging in. And he's not even hit it over. He's just sliced it wide.
Oh, hit off his ankle as well. From the actual TV camera angle, I thought he just drilled it. And I thought the commentators were being harsh on him, saying maybe he could have side-footed it. I was like, the angle's so tight. He has to just absolutely roof that.
Yeah.
But Jesus Christ, he also has to connect with a ball.
Dykes off the line, but it wasn't even off the line, it was going wide. Like, that was there to be scored, and yeah, he just gave Reece James all the time in the world to get back.
I don't know, I think that's bending back in. I think it's I think there's questions there. I think it's incredible from Reece James, absolutely incredible. I mean, Dykes catches it so well. James is at the corner of the 6-yard box as it's being hit, and he gets back to get it off, maybe off the post.
I think it's going off the post. Off the outside, maybe. You're right. Like, I was trying to track the flight, and then James's big head gets in the way. But, but yeah, I think if he just smashed that tighter to the net, and it's just going in, he should be roofing that. And it just seemed like it took him a long time to turn on. And I think he had missed a chance just before that, and it was like, is this boy going to fucking do it or not?
Of course he's not going to do it. Queen's Park Rangers is Dykes. What the fuck were you expecting? Of course it took him a long time to turn.
I did have to look him up during the game, I'm not going to lie. The only one for England, the only nomination, John Stones off the post. Bad header, should be scoring. Like, the replay of that just made it look so bad. He's facing the wrong way. It's like he's trying to aim it out for a throw-in, and it's hit off his head wrong and hit the inside of the post.
Yeah, and he's really changed his game this year. He's been brilliant at getting into the box and scoring goals for City. And Jesus Christ, Scotland. And the old cliche is a cliche for a reason. You're playing against a better team. Do not concede from a set piece.
Yeah.
Make them beat you. And I always find the best way to do that is to not let the opposition's best header of the ball have a radius of 5 meters around him that has only got air in it. And that was criminal. It was just a cross as well. It was just a cross from the corner. Like, nothing clever, no movement. John Stones wasn't made free by a load of England players blocking off. John Stones was just free in the middle of the box. And he fucked that up. That is comfortably the winner of this award.
Oh, 100%. Because for so many reasons, yeah, you're right. He was so free. Like, it was jarring that happened from a set piece early on. And also, like, it's a bad miss for that reason. But that's the winning of the game, surely. Like, you know, like, that has to go in. Not to say that, you know, Scotland still played well, so I don't think they would have had to change too much of their approach, but It'll just relax England. They're in the lead. They can, I don't know, they still might have balls it up, but it's like that has to go in. Like, that's your chance. And especially when it's your only chance, then yeah, you win this award.
Ah, yeah. If that goes in, England win the game. No doubt about it.
The Gary Neville, Maguire is England's most important player. Worst take award. Rio Ferdinand, before the game, this was yesterday, he said it on BBC's coverage, or ITV, one of the two. I'm showing my Irish colours here now. We will win easy, 2 or 3 goals.
Jesus Christ, what a bad call that was.
So dismissive. Like.
So dismissive, but to be honest, I saw Scotland play against the Czech Republic. I believed the hype about England. I thought they came in rusty. They gave Croatia far too much credit. They're a better team than this. They'll be able to beat Scotland. They'll beat them comfortably.
Well, I can add you into this list as well for what you were saying on Tuesday. You were saying the Scotland's tournament was over.
I think we'll play the tapes back at some stage. I'm sure all of us together collectively can do that. Play Tuesday's tapes back.
Nah, we don't need to do that. Now, but in fairness, and they're alive and kicking now. Like our prediction was that, you know, Croatia don't look that good, so they might be able to get something against them, and then who knows what'll happen. But like 4 points would take them a long way. So if they do get that win, then
yeah, look, it's an all or nothing game against Croatia. But you know, and nobody should be under any illusion about how fucking brilliant Scotland played tonight. I mean, we're giving England a good doing because they deserve it. But for a team of one top player and two or three good players, that was brilliant. Like the balance, the connections, the effort to be so tight but also create so many opportunities was just incredible. The effort to put in to get up to help out their teammates whenever they had the ball and to get fucking back and get back into shape so quickly was so admirable. And I'm not sure when the Croatia game is. I assume it's in 4 days.
Tuesday.
You might just be a bit worried about the effort they put into that game tonight to be able to come back and beat a scarred Croatia team.
Well, do you know what? It's actually on the 5th anniversary of Ireland beating Italy.
I'm sure the Scotland players will be bringing that into the game with them. Guys, do you remember whenever that other country who we have nothing to do with beat an Italian team who had already qualified and dropped all 11 players? We can do that against this Croatia team who are desperately trying to qualify as well. Such an easy team talk. Steve, I hope Steve's writing this down.
Are you forgetting about the symbol of friendship that Scotland and Ireland offered each other ahead of some fucking game a few years ago? Honestly, it was the worst experience of my life sitting in the Aviva Stadium in Dublin watching
Ireland play.
They were bringing out like flyers for each other, and the PA system was like, as a symbol of friendship that exists between the two nations. I was like, what is this fucking nonsense?
Well, they weren't going to be giving each other any footballing tips.
Second nomination for the worst take award, Ronnie Whelan on Irish TV. Quote, Tyrone Mings wouldn't normally do that for Villa. As Tyrone Mings fucking lumps the ball 80 metres into the sky and high over the striker.
Yeah, you can just add Ronnie Whelan to the incredibly long list of people who don't watch Aston Villa play football.
Last nomination and definitely the winner, Paul Merson. Quote, if Grealish rips it up, then Southgate will be under severe pressure to pick him again, and he doesn't need that pressure. So Paul Merson is basically saying that Southgate is right to not start Grealish because Grealish could turn out to be his best player, and then he'd be under pressure to play his best player again. And like, yeah. You would not want that as a manager, would you?
No one could survive under that sort of heat. That's just the sort of pressure that would make him wilt. Imagine finding out that you've got a player who's better than the other players that you have. That would just be devastating. How could he ever recover from that? People would be saying, pick Jack Grealish. The other thing about this is, as well, people are already saying it. Southgate has already picked Jack Grealish. Grealish has won man in the match 5 times for England. But Southgate just seems to be immune to that.
There's a brilliant picture going around online. It's the guy who points Grealish, the scumbag, he points Grealish for the Birmingham fan, and he's wearing a Peaky Blinders hat, and then there's a picture, it just shows you a picture of him from behind pointing Grealish, and then there's a picture of Southgate in the stands wearing a Peaky Blinders hat. That explains everything. It's bizarre. Like, it is bizarre. He will begrudgingly have to use this player. Like, tonight he'll only turn to him when it's needed. He didn't turn to him in Croatia when it was needed to kill the game, but he didn't need it because Croatia weren't good. They weren't under pressure. They were under pressure tonight, and he threw gritted teeth had he call for him. It's so strange. Like, just don't bring him into the squad if that's what you want. But like, the fact that he's in the squad, you've put yourself under more heat now.
Look, it's time for English media, English ex-players, English fans to let it go and be happy about the memories. Going deep in a World Cup is great. But you did that in spite of Southgate and because of the draw. But in spite of Southgate is the key here. This team is now something to genuinely be excited about. You have a real chance and 18 months to build from the World Cup. Don't let this lad hold you back. You're better than that. You could blossom if you just got out of his shade. Find your confidence, your own voice. Take those glasses off. Let the hair down. Oh my God, you're beautiful, England.
But honestly, like, think of England in big terms, because that's the way they should be thought. Like, they should be one of the tournament favourites. So imagine this was...
But they are! They're the favourites! That's the fucking most baffling thing. So, they're playing as if they're Scotland.
So that's what I'm saying. Imagine they're France, like, who probably, I assume, they're the next tournament favourites. And imagine France were playing this way. Everybody, like all of us, everybody in Ireland, everybody in England would be like, Jesus, the French aren't up too much. Like, because you have to consider how many chances have England created in the last two games? Honestly, very few. How potent have they looked? And who have they played? Fucking nobody. Like, it's I'd say all those other teams now, Belgium, Portugal, for all the teams, Italy, these teams here showing up well, are looking at England thinking, ah, right, that it's this England who's shown up. Like, we'll worry about them in a year and a half time. We don't need to worry about them this summer.
Oh, England are done. As soon as England play a team of quality, they're gone. That's it. That is so clear now. It's just the same thing. Like, I thought this might have been different. I was so annoyed that such a shit manager had been handed this team. Because you know, you can't build a team at international level. You've got the players you've got. And I was so annoyed that Gareth Southgate was dealt this hand. He was just given two pocket aces, but he fucked one of them over his shoulder.
So Paul Merson wins that award. Ireland at Euro 2012, just fucking go home award. Harry Kane. No, I'm not saying that Harry Kane should just go home. I'm not saying if I was his manager, I would send him home. But there is a question. Like, it does interest me. I remember after the Croatia game, and like, I just thought this is just typical England at a big tournament. You know, all the, like, millions of eyes are on them. Like, England, this is why we spend so much time talking about them. They're big time. Like, there is a big time feel every time England are involved, especially in a big tournament. And you know, Kane, who smiles away their best strike option. But after one game, it was like the criticism was there for him because he wasn't good. He didn't do anything. And then tonight he's getting brought off, like the captain, the main striker, and he wasn't good. So I suppose my question, I'm not saying he should just fucking go home, but the question is he undroppable?
No, so there's an interesting thing that's happening with England and doesn't happen with Spurs. Think about Spurs' forward line. It's an entirely different system. Kane is the only person capable of playing number 10 for Spurs. So he drops into that position and is loving it. And there's been so much hype around that. People talk about it so much. Be under no illusion about how stupid some people are. That will just feed into their head. They'll try to create the narrative. They'll try to create the story themselves instead of just letting it come naturally. That came naturally into Kane's game this year. He had Son and Moura bombing either side of him, so it works so well. But that's not what this England team is. England have three players behind Kane who would all love to play in the number 10 position. So the last thing they fucking need is Harry Kane dropping down into the number 10 position. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. Harry Kane floating out to left back, like I said, picking up the ball. Picking up handy ball. Who are you going to pass it to now, friend? You're whipping this across the pitch to the other fullback. Luke Shaw's just standing next to you. It's a waste of fucking time. And the other thing is, we all know that Harry Kane can play as a number 9. Stop dicking around. Play like that for Spurs when it suits the team. Play as a number 9 for England.
He played like that for Spurs. Like, he won top goal scorer this year. Like, he played like that for Spurs and did it naturally. Like, it actually almost grated with me a little bit because I thought Kane always had this in his game anyway. Like, everyone talked about he's evolved his game now. He obviously did it way more and he positionally, like, obviously dropped deeper more often. But, like, Kane was always good on the ball. He was always good for a pass. He was always good to drop. When the opportunity presented itself, because what that also did It made the defence guess. It made them worry because you had two whippets going in from the wings and going in behind. But then it also gave the centre-backs and the centre midfield a fucking headache because it's like, who's picking up Kane here? And then it frees him up. He's coming back, he's playing it. But most importantly, he's getting back in to lead the line because, like you say, he's a number nine. And that's exactly where England, they have Mount and Foden there. And maybe Grealish, who knows, they might use him a bit more. Like, they have all those players there. Kane needs to fuck off and lead that line because otherwise these boys are feeding nobody. They should be feeding one of the most lethal strikers in Europe. But like I mentioned, that offside of Sterling's, like, if you go back and watch it, like, it's criminal how far Kane is behind, but how little he's trying to get back up. Just, like, that has to be automatic for a striker. He has to, like, every time he passes the ball off, it needs to be, I'm getting into the box or I'm leading the line again. I'm being the furthest man forward. And I don't know if it's, yeah, if it's a deliberate thing. I don't think it's arrogance, but, like, it's definitely lazy and it's definitely hindering him.
Yeah, but being that person who drops out and passes the ball around and controls the game is like a drug. Being the player who does that in the team is really, really, really difficult to let go of. Kane needs to let go of it for England. Or when he does it, you're right, he needs to get back into the fucking box. He needs to get that hunger back to score a goal. Harry Kane picked this up in his game 5 years ago where he realised, oh wait, every time Salah gets the ball, he's shooting. Every time Ronaldo gets the ball, he's shooting. Yeah. And they're shooting the fucking lights out. And it doesn't matter if their ratio, shots to goals ratio, is going down because their goals are going fucking up.
Yeah.
And they're also making the other team panic, which we've talked about loads of times before as well. And Kane started doing that. He needs to get the hunger back to score goals. He needs to get the hunger back to lead the line for England.
Yeah. And in fairness to him as well, though, and it shouldn't be forgotten, he also needs a system not designed around him, but he needs managed. Like, when that's happening, in the first half especially, like, Southgate needs to rectify it. He needs to rectify it in the training pitch now. Like, getting your striker into the game is an important job, and his touch count is pathetic. Like, it is pathetic how little he's involved in these matches. Like, I always go back to when Villa played Spurs under the heyday of Tim Sherwood. I reference Tim Sherwood far too often on this podcast.
It's grim, all right, yeah.
But there was a stat at they won 1-0, I think it was, at White Hart Lane, and Benteke had 70 odd touches. He had the most touches in the game. Like, you know, more than the keepers and everybody else. But it was because everything was going through him. Like, that was obviously what Villa should be doing because he was by far and away the best player at that time. And they made sure everything went through him and it made them more dangerous and push the other team back, all the simple stuff that we know that happens when you're bringing a striker into the game. And when you have one of the best strikers in Europe, he needs to be bringing that out. He shouldn't be letting him drift around. Like, that's,
yeah, but that's the no game plan encourages it because he's not getting into the game. He's coming out to get into the game.
Yeah.
And he thinks it's fine. He thinks it's fine because it's in his head that this is something that he does. He drops out in and around there. You don't drop in and around there. Son runs past you and you come out.
Yeah.
It's not the same thing as just wandering out to have a chat with Declan Rice.
Yeah. Questions we can't answer, but probably will. Wheels aren't really going to bring back Ryan Giggs now, are they?
Oh, God, I hope not.
I mean, like, Jesus, Rob Page must have this sewn up. Like, there must be conversations now thinking, Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, this guy's doing all right.
Yeah, and isn't it great that they're doing so well? Like, they were well worth their draw in the first game against Switzerland, who, let's be honest, have been the most overrated team in the world for the last 10 years. I mean, they have been gaming the coefficients to make sure they're highly ranked in the qualifying draw, which makes sure they qualify for major tournaments, which makes sure they're highly ranked for the qualifying draw, and it goes on and on. They've been knocking around the top 10 in the world rankings in world football, never been past the last 16 in the World Cup or the Euros. So let's all just collectively agree, and this is something that really annoys me, let's just all collectively agree now to stop referencing the FIFA world rankings. Let's stop saying Belgium are the number one ranked team in the world. It clearly doesn't fucking mean anything. And Switzerland are your evidence of that. But Wales, They gave Turkey the second spanking of the tournament. Missed a penalty along the way as well. They were brilliant against Turkey, but Turkey, though, I mean, they have to be the worst dark horse since the Black Beauty remake. This Turkey team. And it comes back to what I always implore of people who are going to speak out loud about football. Watch football first. Just watch football. Remember what you've watched and bring that into your next conversation. I mean, if you're saying they have a strong squad and then your next sentence is just listing Soyuncu, two fourth-choice centre-backs who you're only naming because they're being paid by big clubs, Calhanoglu, I mean, like, forget about that, lad, and a soon-to-be 36-year-old centre-forward with a good career behind him. If that's your next sentence, then don't utter the first sentence.
Yeah.
Turkey are shite. How the fuck were they being talked up before this tournament?
There's always one, isn't there? It's usually an Eastern European team that we, you know, nobody knows about, but they've heard enough in the grapevine that they're confidently, like, this is the equivalent of people giving you tips for Cheltenham and they don't have a fucking clue. They're just standing on what they've heard.
This is equivalent of Alex Ferguson telling everyone to stick a fiver on Serbia for the 2010 World Cup. Knocked out in the group stage, just like Turkey.
But did I hear you mention a 36-year-old, a soon-to-be 36-year-old? Because I've got another question we can't answer. Is Ashley Young just going to be a crabbed old man surrounded by all these young ones in the Villa changing room? So, like, we heard her thoughts on Tuesday just before the signing was made. Like, we're delighted with it. It ticks a box of Villa needing more leaders. It ticks a box of needing left back cover. He's also right back cover. And it ticks a very exciting box of another option as a wide attacker. So, like, it made all the sense in the world to bring Ashley Young in on a free transfer. And he's come home and he's talking, like, I love this interview. Now, I am a sap for this stuff, but he's talking there about this, you know, almost doing it, you know, when they was there for 4 years under O'Neill, you know, almost like really achieving something. They were obviously top six for 3 years in a row. And then he immediately was able to speak about the 2010 League Cup final, the one Vidic should have been sent off in, to quote him. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yes, it's not just me that's still hurting from that. Ashley Young is still hurting from it. But then I had a thought. that he's 36 in July. Villa are the youngest squad in the Premier League. So I went in to see, hang on, there must be somebody he can hang out with in that team. But no, all the other 30-year-olds, Heaton, El Mohammedy, Neil Taylor, Langed, they're all gone. They're all gone. The next closest to Ashley Young is Emmy Martinez at 28.
Hang on. The next closest to Ashley Young is Big JT.
JT's going to fucking love it. Somebody else to hang out with. But Emmy Martinez, 28, and he's just shy of 8 years younger than him. Like, that's a tough changing room for poor Ashley.
It is, or it's a really easy changing room for him and a really useful player to have knocking around in there. Ashley Young is undoubtedly a good signing. I think it's not exactly what I was after, but we're not done yet. We might sign a few other lads closer to Ashley's age.
That's it. It just made too much sense to not do it. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't mean that's it.
Exactly, and I still want another centre midfielder that walks into the team, another forward that walks into the team, and I mean two players that will start games for every team outside of City, Liverpool, Chelsea, and Man United. Maybe just at the minute. I mean, it shouldn't be too hard to imagine getting a player at McTominay and Fred's level, but you know what I mean. In that's the best way to improve your squad, signing players that make your starting 11, your squad players.
Yeah.
Particularly when you're at our level. I mean, Ashley Young does improve the squad. We've released two backup fullbacks, and we would have been looking at 25 to 30 million plus to improve on target or cash, and it would have been a marginal improvement, and there are easier, bigger wins. So Ashley Young was a necessity and also just genuinely a good signing.
There are two other 28-year-olds in the squad alongside Martinez. Jed Steers, the other ones. These boys won't even be training with him. They'll be down training with the goalkeepers. And Tyrone Mings is the other. Last one. Who is leading England into the 2022 World Cup?
It's an interesting question. All right.
Actually, I suppose it just depends on how the rest of this tournament goes. I still think it'll be Southgate, but like the real possibility is they'll get the result against Czech Republic. They just need to draw now, really, to get top right, and then that's them facing probably Portugal or France in the next round, and I can't see them going past that. Is that going to be a lot of pressure on Southgate then? I think he talks enough shit. I think he talks enough shit from a football point of view. He's got the semi-final feat from the World Cup, and he's held himself really well with off-the-field stuff over the last few months. I think he'll still have enough credit in the bank to take them into the World Cup, and then that will be it.
But I think English fans, and again, particularly media, they have to get real with themselves. I mean, I heard people talking beforehand saying, you know, you can't say in the same sentence that you think England will get to last four, but you also think that France or Portugal are going to win it, because you're going to end up playing France or Portugal. England have to be competing with France and Portugal.
Yeah.
Like, they can't just get knocked out by them, which is what's going to happen. They have to be competing with them. And I understand why people are saying France and Portugal, because their players are brilliant. So are England's. England's squad is insanely good.
Yeah.
Trent Alexander-Arnold crawled into the squad. Gareth Southgate didn't want them. Reece James is brilliant. Kyle Walker is brilliant. John Stones had a really good year. Tyrone Mings. Tournament football is made for Tyrone Mings, because he doesn't have 45 games where he can just have three cock-ups in it. If Tyrone Mings stays involved in a game the whole way through it, he's absolutely fucking brilliant. Luke Shaw is brilliant. The goalkeeper is dodgy. That's a bad position for England. But Declan Rice, Calvin Phillips, which is normally Jordan Henderson, England are a class team.
Yeah.
And if people name all these Portuguese players, none of them are any better than the English players. Phil Foden, Jack Grealish, Mason Mount, Harry Kane. These players are unbelievable. And it sounds good to say Fernandes, Jota, but are they any better than the England players? They're not. England have to be competing with these teams, and they need a manager to do it.
Really shows you, though, the mentality, like that idea that as soon as you face one of those decent sides, then that's it. It's over. Like that has to stop. It has to stop that it's an automatic elimination when you meet anybody from Croatia 2018 up. Like, you know, every time England meet Portugal, Germany, like, and everybody just accepts it. Like, that's it. It's over. The tournament's over then. It's how far we can get before we meet one of those. And that's, honestly, maybe that was good enough for the England teams of the past. And maybe that's what everybody enjoyed outside of England, because it was always fun watching this train head towards playing a better team. But none of these teams aren't better than England. Like, exactly. You know, I'm not saying that England are automatically better, but like, it's about time now that they started competing. It can't just be when we play them, we're done.
Yeah, but even think about it as well. The Portuguese defence, like, people keep talking about England's defence being dodgy. Pepe still plays for Portugal. Pepe starts centre half for Portugal.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we're going to have a lot more fun with this. Let's see what the Czech Republic game has in store. So we'll be back probably on Tuesday, but we might knock someone out before then, but we'll see how it's going.
Yeah, let's discuss that with me beforehand.
If you're enjoying the show, please get in touch on Twitter, The Villa Podcast, and yeah, get us on email as well, thevillapodcast@gmail.com. Oh, and actually, if you've made it this far, a little treat for you. If you go to look1977.com, lovely menswear store, you can use the discount code Vyman. That's Andy Vyman, but the code is just Vyman, and you get 20% off there. So don't say we never gave you anything after all this. So well done if you got to here and got that code. And keep in touch, and we'll see you soon. All the best. That wind is calling my name, and I won't wait,
or I'll never get on. Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.